Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's July 3rd. 58 degrees currently in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 57 degrees. On the phone with us now from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy Wednesday. Park City and Heber, we're looking at gorgeous weather over the next couple of days. So northwest flow in place still today, keeping temperatures in that comfortable range by the afternoon. Mid-70s expected in Park City. Sunshine all day long and 85 in Heber. Not much change heading into Independence Day. In fact, we're going to continue to see temperatures a little cooler than normal. Mid-70s again in Park City, mid-80s for Heber. But the heat will start to build over the weekend. A ridge of high pressure to the west of us that's situated just along the west coast will start to shift inland, allowing temperatures to continue to rise over the weekend. So low 80s by the end of the week on Friday, mid-80s on Saturday and Sunday with more sunshine. No showers in the forecast. Unfortunately, we're going to stay dry and getting hot into next week with upper 80s expected by the middle of next week. Should be about 91 degrees in Park City. Heber looking at those mid-80s today, tomorrow, upper 80s on Friday. Over the weekend, we'll be in the low 90s with lots of sunshine and mid to upper 90s into next week. In fact, 98 forecast right now for Heber by next Tuesday.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour, we'll get our trails report with Laura Anthony, and later on, Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt with his final update on development projects throughout the county. Leadership Park City President Betsy Wallace will be joined by Events Chair Michael Fisher with details on next week's alumni picnic, as well as some other alumni events. And the Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens and Eats, Helen Nadel, with a preview of some of the upcoming events and a look at how the garden's doing. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include journalist and author Christy Oshwandan, who talks about metabolically healthy obesity, or MHO, in her recent Scientific American article. People who are fat and healthy may hold keys to understanding obesity. Then in the ongoing series on print publications in the outdoor and mountain town space, a conversation with veteran publisher Paul Ulrich, who is the editor of two magazines, Ascent and the forthcoming Van Life Adventure Journal. All of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. On the phone now with Trails Report a day early, we've got Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy birthday, Park City and USA. Looks like we've got Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting that next week they're going to have construction on the Coyote Switchbacks at the top of Suffern Succotash. The developer for the Dordanelle Ridge has asked to close the trail as they go through and develop that area. It's private land up there, so we do appreciate the access that we do have, and we're going to hopefully be patient with them as they go through and develop the trails, and they will be closing trails and building trails kind of on and off throughout the next couple of years. So just keeping in mind that if you come up to a closed trail, there's a good reason for it, and Mia and Wasatch Trails Foundation will be reporting on social media at Wasatch Trails Foundation's platforms. So if you want to keep up to date, know where you can ride and where you or hike, you know, snowshoe as we go into the winter and whatnot, definitely checking at Wasatch Trails Foundation's website and social media platforms before you go is a good idea. Corey from South Summit Trails is saying that all of the trails in that neck of the woods are good to go. I heard that the Slate Creek trails are riding really well, and it's a lot of fun out there. If you haven't been out there, maybe this weekend wouldn't be the best time, as I'm sure that it's going to be very busy in the Uintas. So, you know, just keep it on your to-do list. Slate Creek is a really, really cool trail system. Mountain Trails, let's see. We've got Rick reporting that everything's good to go, including the Crest Trail. So get up and get some high, cool air up there. Park City Mountain reports that the Keystone and Apex Trails will remain closed until tomorrow. They're doing some work on the lift line on Mother Lode. So definitely want to keep away from Keystone and Apex. Looks like Dave from Basin Rec is saying that all the single track in the basin is good. And there is a construction notice for the RTS trailhead. They're going to partially open that trailhead And they will be installing a pit toilet, I guess, in the next couple of days. So beware, maybe that's not the best place to head out. They'll hopefully have the bathroom open next week. And then also they'll be doing some crack seal repairs on the Millennium Trail between Summit Park and the Olympic Parkway, and also the trail that goes in front of the outlets out to the McDonald's area in the library. That's it for now. I hope you have a great weekend. Trails have been awesome. And yeah, that's it for now. We'll see you out there.
Okay. Thanks, Laura. Well, a petition circulating on change.org is asking the Park City School District not to renew the superintendent's contract until a new school board takes over next year. KPCW's Christine Willer has details.
Board President Andrew Kaplan told KPCW in June the board intends to renew Superintendent Jill Gilday's contract this year. Now, some residents are pushing back. Josh Mann and Carl Person, who both have students in Park City Public Schools, posted the petition June 30th. It requests Gilday's contract not be considered for renewal until voters elect new board members in November and take office next year. The petition states the district would, quote, benefit from finding a new superintendent who places a higher priority on transparency, accountability, and following laws. It also cites reasons Gilday's contract should not be renewed at all. Petitioners also say Gilday hasn't had a performance evaluation since being hired in 2018 and claims she has had a, quote, subpar performance which has negatively impacted district employees, families, and taxpayers. The district told KPCW the board, quote, conducts a thorough performance review for the superintendent each year. Based on those reviews, the board either renews the superintendent's two-year contract or hires someone else. The petition's list of reasons for parent dissatisfaction with Gilday also includes the federal investigation that found over 180 harassment incidents in the district, construction project failures, and illegally storing contaminated soil behind Treasure Mountain Junior High. According to KPCW's count, 89 people had signed the petition as of Tuesday. Christine Muller, KPCW News.
Well, in his final interview to give us an update on some of the development projects going on in Summit County, a segment that we at one time called What's That with Pat, it's outgoing Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning.
Morning.
All right. Well, as always, let's kind of start with the new applications that have come through since we last talked.
Well, since we last chatted in June, we had nearly three dozen applications come in. It's a busy time of the year, right? A lot of them are just associated with, you know, minor residential constructions and sign permits and that sort of thing. But there are a couple I wanna note, and these are really recent applications, as recent as yesterday. So forgive me if I don't have all of the details down, but the first two are projects in the Canyons area. One is a ski run, and this is being called the Last Chance at White Pine Canyon Ski Run. Obviously, the name's the indicator. It's a run in the White Pine Canyon area. These types of projects are administrative conditional use permits. They're low impact permits, we call them. Depending on the nature and the impacts of them, they could potentially go to the Planning Commission for review and recommendation. But, you know, anytime we have a new ski run, it's the obvious. It's where, what's the visibility, what are the plans for, you know, revegetation, you know, are there going to be lights in this particular case? And obviously that's not going to be the case, but it's a new ski run and it's going to be visible. So I thought I'd note that for the community. The other is there's going to be a reworking at the base area in the lower village of the stage and seating area. This too is a low impact permit, but you know the community events, the concerts that are taking place down there over the years are continuing to grow. They're being more successful, and I think this proposal is just recognizing that with, you know, upgraded, you know, facilities down there for the performers and the folks who will be there as part of the concert. So that's going to be, I think, you know, an interesting one. Talking about signs, I noticed the sign permit applications for Anaya's Market, and that's a project that's been under construction now for a couple of years at the entrance to Silver Creek. along Interstate 80. Those are those buildings that are going up, the brick buildings. And I think if all goes well, we're going to probably see occupants of these this fall or later this fall. It's going to be a grocery store, a deli. There's an associated satellite pad for some other retail. And then there's some workforce housing units associated with that. But seeing the signs permits come in, that's an indicator that it's getting close for occupancy, and that'll be a nice addition for the folks out in the Silver Creek area and, you know, where I live out Trailside, to have that market open. The last one is, again, in Silver Creek. It's a low-impact permit for a private recreation facility. This particular application out on Silver Creek Road was in front of the Planning Commission two meetings ago. And what's involved here is a property owner would like to build a greenhouse, and the greenhouse would be for their own private farm-to-table family functions type events. What we took it to the Planning Commission for, it just had a number of attributes that seemed to be potentially, you know, an event center in waiting. And so the Planning Commission at the conclusion of that discussion said, you know, this probably fits within a land use category of a private recreation facility, that being gardening and, you know, growing farm to table for personal use. You know, it's a recreational activity, but they wanted to see this one come back to review, allow some public neighborhood comment, and place, if they move forward with an approval of that, the necessary conditions to make sure that this doesn't, pardon the bad pun, grow into something that, you know, would be a neighborhood impact. In terms of the Eastside County, a number of plat amendments, lot line adjustments, nothing out of the ordinary, but it's an opportunity for me to let everyone know that the Cedar Crest Village overlay, which, you know, we were looking at possibly a July 18th meeting date, is being pushed into August. The reason being is part of what the Planning Commission were driving at was they wanted to see a more robust traffic study for the area. The traffic study that had been done just focused on, you know, a portion of the project area, the Larry H. Miller Ivory Homes properties. They wanted to see the entire piece. And then we're being told that the applicants are working on some revised proposals. And so while that work's being done, we think it's probably the wise thing to do is to allow that work to get completed. My guess is the next time this would go back to the commission would likely be mid-August, and I think it would be like the August 15th. But as always, we're gonna wait to make sure that work is done, been reviewed, and we've had adequate time to notice. We'll be putting the reader board back out to let folks know in the area when the meeting's gonna be. We'll re-advertise with the courtesy notice, but no Cedar Crest Village meetings in July.
Okay. Hey, what happened to the parking garage at the base of the Canyons Village Cabriolet lot? It hasn't even started yet, huh?
That's a really good question. You know, with the 4th of July coming up like tomorrow and all the events, that's a good question to ask. So, again, everybody, the garage involves building a little over 1,800 parking spaces down at the base near the Cabriolet. It went to the Planning Commission for a review and recommendation earlier this spring. Again, based on the Canyons Development Agreement, that type of project is an administrative conditional use permit, or an LIP. Community Development Director is the final decision maker. In that case, it was me. Based on their recommendation, I issued the approval of the garage about a month ago, roughly a month ago. Why it hasn't started is simply this. Originally, it was contemplated that the project would be built over a series of phases over a couple of years. It's since been decided by the applicant they're going to rip the Band-Aid off and do it in one construction campaign. They're going to do it once and do it all at one time, I guess. And as a result of that, the original two-phase process had resulted in construction drawings that were for that first phase. Going back and doing it all at once means those drawings have to be updated, the construction mitigation plan updated, and I know that they're feverishly working on that. My honest calculation is we're probably several weeks out from breaking ground on that, but some of the key points of that project was, you know, the closing of that lot for special, of, you know, for most of the summer, with the exception of special events. And it's going to be the coordinating of that using the existing lots and the adjacent lots that we'll continue to work forward on. But yeah, we anticipated them to be under construction right now, but it's understandable the reasons why they haven't started. But I would guess as we move closer to August, they're going to, you know, the community and the neighborhood's going to see dirt starting to move around on that one. But it is going to happen starting this year.
Okay. And the Klein Dolly parcel, again, this is property owned by Summit County near Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. What's the latest with that?
Had a really successful open house a few weeks ago. And the purpose of the open house was to enlist neighborhood and community input on what possibly would be some of the right answers out there. And we got a full spectrum of feedback, right? You know, people recognizing the importance of that East Canyon Creek corridor, wanting to make sure that that was protected. There seems to be some interest in some public facilities out there, you know, among them possibly a fire station. There was an openness for you know, some residential, some workforce housing out there. But again, that was just feedback. What's going to happen here, probably early August, is we're going to take that feedback to council to get some direction. That direction could likely see us begin to draft a request for proposal to bring in some help and explore some ideas from some out-of-house groups on what a project, given some specific direction from council of what it might include, give a chance to have some folks come in and give us some ideas. So I think the next public discussion on that, early August.
Okay. KPCW's Connor Thomas did an update on the East Side General Plan and the need for an almost completely redo of that plan. But what's the time frame on that, as well as the Snyderville Basin redo general plan?
Boy, like, staff is flogging themselves like rental mules due back at 2. It's a big push. It's probably the biggest staff initiative of 2024. Right now, where we're at is getting ready to, you know, to launch what I'm going to call the first round of public engagement. So it's going to go like this. We're going to have a big push, both sides, East and West, with some public engagement, read public input, the follow-up from the visioning that we did a couple of years ago. That's going to result in comment and questions. So the next step beyond that is what, you know, we planners call that data collection phase, and trying to get some answers, you know, try to quantify some measurables with that. Second round of public input, that'll go until probably the latter part of this year, and then we're into the drafting of the document. If all goes according to schedule, and I have no doubt that, you know, the team that's working on it will keep it on schedule, this will be in front of the planning commissions next summer and in front of council, you know, for review and adoption like the fall of 2025, so in a year. That East Side code that, you know, you mentioned and Connor did that nice story on is an interesting dilemma, you know. Is it a complete page one rewrite, or is it just, you know, a substantial rewrite? And I think it's going to probably be closer to a page one rewrite. Going all the way back to 2013, When I started at Summit County, we took a crack at what I'm going to say some chicken wire and band-aids of the general plan. And the reason it was sort of that chicken wire duct taping of it is at that point in time, the Eastside community had a number of concerns. And we all recognized at that time that, ranching and farming wasn't going to be the only influence of land use over there. There was a lot of concern about the residential strip development along, the county roads and the state highways, that old highway corridor issue where the homes were kind of pulled up, right up next to the highway. There was a big desire to go back and rethink that zoning map and that zoning code. And we put enough language into the general plan at that point to kind of recognize those facts. You need to be able to explain it in a general plan before you can go out and make zoning map changes or code changes. And so we did, minimal amount for us to engage in that other conversation. What we were really desperately trying to prevent at that time was a nuclear arms development race with the municipalities. We just didn't want to see that happen. And I think we've been successful to a large degree on that front. Now that we've got some of those other tools put in place, it's so appropriate to go back and do a much more in-depth plan. I mean, that existing Eastside plan is only 10 pages long without any illustrations, maps, or exhibits. I think I'm not too far out of bounds by saying, the quality of the future on the Eastside is going to be absolutely dependent on the quality of that vision and that plan. And that's going to be, virtually a complete redo, which I believe it needs to happen.
Okay, I'm out of time, but I want just real quick answers then. When will the County Council subcommittee start updating the public with negotiations regarding Dakota Pacific?
Yeah, I haven't heard a date on that. What I have been informed is there have been a series of meetings. Those meetings really have been continuing to focus on the transit site and, parking and the interchange. There hasn't been any talk of density. I think what we're likely to see here as we move into mid-July, early August is what I'm going to call a council conversation, where they're going to start talking about publicly, the structure of what the discussions with DPRE and a possible new plan might look like. So I know people are really, really getting, impatient where this is. I'm just gonna, trust your counsel. They're going to be coming out with that conversation here in, I think, the very near future.
Okay. And then next month, August 7th, I'll be talking with your replacement, Peter Barnes. He's up for this, huh?
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. He's going to do a fantastic job.
Okay, Pat, thanks.
All right, Leslie, talk to you soon.
That's outgoing Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, members of all classes of Leadership Park City are invited to the annual picnic next Monday at City Park, just one of the many events being planned by the alumni leadership. In the studio with details, I have the president of the alumni group, Betsy Wallace, along with events chair Michael Fisher and Janet Quilter. Good morning to all of you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, any reaction, Betsy, just to Miles finally stepping down?
Oh my gosh, Miles has been so remarkable in this role and has set a, best of class style program for all of us. And I'm excited that he gets to get a little bit of his life back. So I can't thank Miles enough. And I know he's just going to be there helping us on, cheering us on over the next coming years, and he's been great.
Okay, and Michael, have you had a chance to meet his replacement? Has he met with the alumni group?
He did. Scott showed up at our last board meeting that we had earlier in the month, and we had a chance to get to know him, and he seems extremely excited about the new role, honored. He's like, pinch me, I'm so excited. So I think he'll do a good job.
Okay, so both of them, I believe, will be at Monday's picnic.
Yeah, they'll both be there.
Okay, so want to give us the details then?
Sure. So the annual picnic is this upcoming Monday, July 8th at 5 p.m. So save the date for the Leadership Park City Alumni Picnic. Partners and children are welcome, but please no pets. The city is sponsoring the event, and they typically provide the main dish, but it is encouraged to bring a side dish to share. And also BYOB, this year's summer picnic will be located at the South End Pavilion of the City Park instead of Rotary Park, where it has traditionally been. So that's important to know. I believe we moved locations because parking was an issue at Rotary.
Sure. And as I mentioned, everyone, I believe, is invited, so they don't have to be a card-carrying alumni member.
That's correct, because it's put on by the city, and we're there to support the membership side of it, but it's welcome to the public for sure.
Sure. Okay. Who wants to talk a little bit about the alumni membership details? I mean, how much?
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. Sure. So we have about 319, 320 active members, and we're excited about that. We just finished our first alumni survey, and that was led by Drew Cohen, who stood up to do that. And we learned a lot from that. And from that data, we've reorganized a little bit of the alumni board and association, and we have a very strong board coming into this year with the survey results, and then Scott coming into the new role this fall. We're really looking to reboot the alumni group and how it's interacting with all the classes. You know, we've learned that people really want to have events, and one event series that came up that Jana developed was All X, and she's going to speak about that in just a moment. But we've just had a great outpouring of what's important about first the leadership program, and second the alumni program being something that really connects people and providing that network across the fabric of the city. So I think it's just a marvelous board, and I'm excited to be part of it.
All right, can you share a little bit more of the data that you saw?
Yeah, sure. So we asked questions like, what did you like? What was the reason that you stepped into the organization itself? And it was, everybody understood that the networking was so important in this city. You know, you meet people in your own lane sometimes, and then if you go through the program, you all of a sudden get to meet everybody around town, which is really remarkable. I think the second thing that people wanted was this continuation of having their class. What do you do afterwards? How do you have that networking? How do you have that engagement throughout town? And that was something that we really needed to hone in on. And that's something that Michael's been working on, developing, along with the board, developing monthly events. And so we have events all summer long, and both Jana and Michael will talk about that. But it's talking about the legacy that Miles developed, how networking is really important in this town, and how you can use this as a stepping stone to just enjoy life here.
Yeah, so there is a cost though to it.
It is, it's $50, you can go online. It's our website is leadershippc.org, and wanted to make sure people go on that org to sign up for becoming a member. It's really easy to do that. And that allows you to get into the events that are coming up over the next 12 months. And again, they're practically monthly of what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so otherwise, if you don't pay the $50 a year, you would pay to attend each of the upcoming events? Is that how you're structuring it, Michael?
Yeah, that is correct. If you don't pay the $50 membership, you're paying for each event, which can be anywhere from $10 to $20, depending on the event and if there's catering. Out of the 319 that Betsy mentioned that we have that many accounts in our directory, 55% of those are active. So one of the goals of this picnic is to remind people to register again for another year. So we'll have a table set up at the picnic, you know, where people can go and sign up and rejoin their membership, and we're looking for renewals and new people to join. That's one of the goals at this picnic.
Right. I'm sorry. And one of the things that we were talking about last night, Michael and myself, there are 30 classes on average. There were 30 people per class, so that's 900 people, right? So if you think 900, a piece of that have left the city, so they're not in that pool anymore. So having just 319 people on the system as a member, whether active or not, is really remarkable. So we want to continue to grow that.
Sure. And how do you know if your membership expired?
That's a good question.
I mean, I haven't seen.
We might need to look into that.
I haven't seen a renewal email or anything like that.
It's amazing how that's on our list now.
Yeah, I think that's something we need to brush up on,
we'll
for
figure
sure.
Figure it out. Okay.
Yeah, and I was just going to mention, be sure, and in addition to the Leadership Park City alumni, which, as Betsy said, is Leadership PC, maybe PCA.org, right. Alumni. Also follow the Park City Alumni Facebook group, because you'll get a lot of updates on events there. And, you know, so they're posted on the website, on the Facebook, and then also Lola is, you know, in charge of our newsletter every month, and the events are always, you know, announced in those newsletters.
Right. So we have the picnic coming up, and then we have pickleball on July 19th, and Jana was going to give us a little update on that.
Yeah, we are excited for this. We're going to have a round robin pickleball tournament, and on the 19th from 5 to 7 o'clock at the PC Mark, and we're hoping people will sign up and have a good time there.
Okay, is there a cost to that then?
Not if you're a member.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And the other thing I wanted to make sure we talked about was a new program that Jana started this last year called All X, and so I wanted to make sure she had a moment on that one.
Yeah, as Betsy mentioned, All X came back on our survey as our top event. It was designed with the idea in mind that we have all this talent that has come out of Park City Leadership, and we can capitalize that on that in the alumni group, and we can keep learning leadership skills from each other. The goal, one of the goals of leadership is long-term group-oriented learning, and so we thought we would continue that through the All X series. And All X stands for Alumni Leadership Leading, and playing upon the TEDx title. And it is a TEDx format. We pick three speakers from Park City Leadership each event, and they speak in a 15 to 17 minute format about what they've learned and some of their leadership skills. And it's been really popular. We have had dinner and drinks and some nice locations, and it's been a really positive, fun event.
Okay, so your next one is happening when?
October 10th.
Okay, and what are you doing, about 4 years, that, or?
We do biannual. We'll do two a year. We're having it at a promontory, and it's a nice location of a promontory, a really beautiful room with glass windows looking out over the fall colors. So it's a nice event. We're looking forward to it.
We usually have about 40 to 60 people, and so it's really well attended. But the remaining of the summer, we have, Jana talked about pickleball, and then August 10th, you want to talk about?
Yes, August 10th is, keep your eyes open if you're an alumni. We're doing our, first alumni party at the Aztec Ranch in Browns Canyon. Zafud and Lola Beetlebrox are hosting our August alumni summer party at the Aztec Art Ranch in Browns Canyon, Saturday, August 10th, beginning at 6 p.m. This event features Sunset Cruise on the Frog Prince Art Car, a band provided by the Excellent Concerts for Dancing. There will be live music and toilet bowling, which you're going to have to go there to find out what that is. And be sure to read, if you sign up for the event, how to stay safe, because it is on a ranch. But there is camping overnight if you want to do that.
Okay.
Should be fun.
All right. People can get more information and register then online. I was going to ask Jana, though, for the October 10th event, have you determined your speakers at this point?
We have, but we haven't asked them yet. So we might want to wait and ask before I announce, but they are some good ones. We're excited.
Maybe the pressure of saying it on the radio might, you know, I'm just teasing.
All right. And then also, leadership program will be recruiting for class 31 starting Friday, I believe. Applications are due, any idea when?
That's a good question. I know that it starts this Friday on the 5th. Scott Van Hartsfeld wanted us to mention that. When it closes?
I think it's going to close early September, because they have to seat in October or thereabouts. So it will be relatively quickly. So, you know, they have to get through it in the month of the remainder of July and early August and see where that leads them. But
okay, I'll do some research and
yeah, make thanks sure a lot. That, I appreciate that.
That's
that, yeah.
Updated then. And I guess in terms of, maybe we can just real quick from each of you, I mean, why should somebody apply? I mean, what have you gotten out of it, Michael?
Well, I mean, as I believe Scott said, I kind of agree with him. It kind of makes a large community feel a bit smaller. You get to know all the people. You learn more about the, you know, all the different entities that make up a community, the Chamber of Commerce, you know, City Council, County Council, local people who run local businesses. And it's just a great networking experience. And I think we want to really encourage joining the alumni group, because there's a whole lot more people than out there than your one class. There's 30 years, going on 31 years of these classes.
Okay, that's
yeah, and the same thing. I was in class 12 and working for American Skiing Company, so my lane of people that I interact with was very narrow. And I started with 12, as I just mentioned, and I met so many different people around town that were in the class, and they've been friends of mine since then. And that's been the lovely part. You can walk downtown and go, oh my gosh, there's, you know, whoever. And it's just been a wonderful experience. I also think it's been an experience of developing a project, getting that project through the year, making sure it stays intact as best as possible, and then moving into the, as Michael just mentioned, moving into the alumni side and really staying engaged in the community.
And Jana, anything you wanted to add?
I have also enjoyed the connection that it offers, and also the learning opportunities that normally you wouldn't step into unless you were involved. So I've enjoyed all that.
Okay. And finally, looks like you are looking for folks to apply. You've got a couple of positions open on the leadership board.
Yeah, so we're always looking for people that would love to join the board. We systematically look at it every quarter and just make sure there's somebody out there. If there's somebody out there, that we talk with them and see if they're really interested into it. It's a nice way to make sure that the board stays at a constant pace and allowing us to continue on. And then to work with Paige and to work with Scott coming up. And again, Miles has just been remarkable in developing such a fantastic program.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
Yeah, and you can apply to be on the board on our website, theleadershippca.org, if you're interested. And we should get that, and we'll review it, I'm sure, at our next board meeting. But I would like to also say that the $50 a year, in my opinion, is very worth it. We're doing events almost once a month. We have ski days, a ski day at Park City at Deer Valley. We have, you know, a catered Christmas party, you know, and if you're registered as an alumni, you don't have to pay for any of those events. Maybe for a guest.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and again, as I mentioned, applications for Class 31 with the new director, Scott Van Hartesveldt, opens July 5th. It closes August 23rd.
So okay, just a there heads you go. Up. Thank you.
And you can do that by going on to parkcity.org. All right, Betsy, Michael, and Jana, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks,
Thank
Leslie.
You.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining us now in studio with an update from Summit Community Gardens and Eats is Executive Director Helen Nadel. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Leslie?
Doing great. So the garden is looking good, that despite the fact that I've now planted tomatoes three times. No more. This is it.
That frost we had a couple of weeks ago really took some things out for people. You know, we covered all of our tomatoes, so all the food that we're growing. As you know, in the center of the garden is in the demonstration beds, all of that food goes to the food pharmacy, so local folks in our community who are experiencing food insecurity. We covered all those crops, all those summer fruiting crops we had literally just put in, and lost a bunch. So it's, you know, it's that time of the garden where, like, it's gorgeous. There's also a little heartbreak, right? There's definitely a little heartbreak in gardening. I think whether you're a home gardener or garden with us at Summit Community Gardens, you know there's a lot of joy that comes, but there's also those moments where things that you've been working on, you know, Mother Nature has a way of taking some things out.
Well, I guess I feel a little bit better because I looked for frost cloth and could not find any at the local stores here, so I used paint buckets, 5-gallon paint buckets, which, didn't work that great either.
Well, Leslie, I'm sorry. I hope you get something great from your garden this year. I know a lot of people
onions.
Are looking forward to it.
I got onions.
Yeah.
Let's see. The plots, you do have some plots available.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that. So this is the time of year where we typically have a couple of plots become available. And so I wanted to throw that out to everybody because we have folks who joined the garden thinking they'd be able to garden and something happened. Some, you know, plans changed. And so we have a few plots that are available and people can still plant a lot of things right now. So summer squash, beans, roots like carrots, radishes, greens, all those things you can put in the garden right now. So if you are interested in gardening with us at Summit Community Gardens, you can go to our website and you can go ahead and just sign up or you can email directly our garden director, Melissa@summitcommunitygardens.org. But looking forward to having a few more members join us.
Okay, and I think I've seen a couple of those plots that may be up for rent, but they're full of weeds. I mean, that would take an enormous amount of work to get started. Can you guys help out at all?
That's a great question. We do have volunteer days where we could potentially, you know, we're always looking for volunteers in the garden. Right now the garden staff, like I said, is really, really hard at work harvesting. We were expecting to get about 1,500 pounds of food this year for the food pharmacy. We've already been harvesting for the last month. Families throughout the Wasatch Back have been getting the freshest lettuce, radishes, spinach, and we're really working hard to get lots of other food in the ground. I want to just give a quick shout out to Park City Resort and Vail Epic Promise for supporting our food access work. So that, you know, that work can't be done without staff. So really want to thank them for supporting the food pharmacy as well as our Fruit to Schools program where 500 children in schools receive a piece of fruit every week.
Hmm. Yeah. So you think you'll get 1,500 pounds out of the garden this year?
Well, so we actually were expecting, last year, the first year we were kind of growing in this capacity, we got 1,300 pounds. This year we were actually expecting about 2,000 pounds, Leslie, because we were putting in some high protein potatoes in partnership with USU. We had some really interesting varieties we were growing. Those are still doing fine, but we know, you know, again, thanks to the frost and some of our, you know, pest pressure, our rodent friends who thankfully will be hibernating soon, but we're hoping to get, we think it's going to be about 1,500, a little less than the goal we had planned. We'll see. You know, you just never know. Gardening is one of those great mysteries of life.
Yeah. So what can the garden do about the pot guts? And I know somebody pretty much lost everything last year, so just said, I'm not renewing this year because there's, nothing to being done to get rid of them.
Oh, well, you know, we actually do a lot to try to get rid of them. There's a couple things we can't do, right? Because we are an organic garden, putting poison in any way would actually kind of damage the entire ecosystem. And so we really promote more, the methods that are okay, so that to keep the full entire garden healthy. So people are throwing tons of cayenne pepper in bulk in their garden. Coffee grinds can be helpful. We are actually, I'm going to be rolling out an email to folks, but there are, we can set some traps. I know individual plot renders are starting to do that. We're looking at doing that. We're actually also exploring extermination services. That's not something that we're a tiny nonprofit, not something we had in the budget, but we are definitely exploring that. There are a couple of other measures I'm going to reach out to all of our 134 plot member, renter members directly about. But we definitely, we have always tried to mitigate our rodent friends. I know, it can be discouraging. I know, some of the larger farms plant extra food, right? It's because they know somewhere between 20 and 40% could get lost to Mother Nature, whether that's a storm, a frost, pest pressure. We don't have that luxury, in a garden plot of 4 by 18. So we don't really have that luxury, but we have always done things in the garden. We will continue to do things in the garden. And like I said, I think the hibernation starts in July, so we can all thank goodness about that.
God, that early. Wow. Okay, let's see. Lots of events to get through. Dinners in the garden. What's next?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it is such a vibrant and busy gather season in the garden. Dinners in the garden. Last week, we had a fantastic sold-out dinner where 75 folks feasted on incredible offerings from Jason Greenberg, who's the really stellar Nosh chef, who is such a strong community-minded partner. Shout out also to Hannah Kamler, who provided some great music through Mountain Town Music. This month, we've got Pie and Beer Night coming up on the 24th, of course. Pizza Pie from Red Banjo and SD Pizzeria. We've got beer from Quito's in Salt Lake. And wow, Auntie M's is serving up some pie. We're really excited about that event. That's a 21-plus event. On August 1st, we've got a very special night with Chef Evan LaValle of Wasatch Provisions with a garden-forward, farm-to-table, sustainability-focused dinner. It's going to be delicious. And then Family Night is on August 15th. Want to give a special shout-out to Summit County Restaurant Raptax. They've provided really incredible support for us for the first time this year for these dinners. And also just a shout-out to all of our restaurant and chef partners. We are really having some fun and magical nights in the garden. All of that funding goes towards the food pharmacy and our other food security programs. So very important. A lot of fun, but you're also, it's a really wonderful cause that you're supporting.
Okay. And then you were also, you got a grant then from Summit County Raptax, huh?
Yeah, from the restaurant Raptax. We also did, we were lucky enough, again, first time we received a cultural Raptax, a small grant, but really wonderful to support our La Milpa programming with our wonderful partner, Artists in Mexico in Utah. And I'll just mention the second La Milpa program is coming up on the 23rd of July at 1:30 p.m. That is all about food as culture. We're going to check out what is growing in the two La Milpa beds devoted to traditional crops. We're going to be connecting with the land, honoring the land and the food it produces, doing some tastings. It's going to be great.
Okay.
And that is free, conducted in Spanish and English.
Awesome. All right. What else you got going?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I got to mention our community education. This is another big program that we do to really help bring people together in the garden. There is really something for everybody in the garden. If you are a painter or a watercolor, we've got some great art classes coming up. We just do a couple of those, and there's something about painting in the garden, which is so beautiful, that is really special. So we've got Carol Nilsson coming up next week on the 11th. So you can go ahead and sign up for that on our website. I think we're also on KPCW's calendar. And I, you know, one thing I've got to mention is our camps, Leslie. We do still have a few spaces and camps. Again, something for everyone. Our camp program, you know, a lot of people wonder what is garden camp or what is edible education. And we serve about 1,800 local kids during the school year and about 450 in camps. And when kids come home after a camp or a school program, they've explored where food comes from, what makes healthy soil. They've learned knife skills. They've tried recipes. They've cooked themselves, things like fruit skewers, minty pea and pasta salad, Mexican black bean and corn salad. They've planted seeds, they've harvested a carrot, and they're ready to cook recipes filled with fruits and vegetables. And we know that kids who garden and cook are way more likely to try new foods, which is one of the key things that's linked to lifelong healthy eating. And, you know, gardening, time spent in nature, both are also linked to mental wellness. So this kind of food education really takes the pressure off of trying new foods. And cooking and gardening with a big group of other kids makes it way more fun. So anyway, we love our garden camp programs. We do have next week, there are a couple of spaces still in the Cycle to Cycles camp with third through sixth graders with Recycle Utah. Kids bike around town to explore cycles. And then we have a price break on our pre-K cycles, talking water, food soils, food cycles, lots of circular art projects with our youngest kids. You can get that camp, again, that's 20% off. And then we do have a few scattered spaces in other camps. So garden camp is a tremendous amount of fun. We hope you will join us for that.
Okay. You've got, and again, lots more events happening throughout the
yeah,
summer.
So. Yes. Please hop on the website. You can look at our calendar, the chamber calendar, KPCW calendar. Check out what is going on and come join us. We are a tiny nonprofit. The support we have from volunteers, supporters, and people who join us really do go a long way.
Okay. Anything else, Helen?
No, just really wanted to thank you, Leslie, for the time, and really look forward to seeing everybody at the garden. It is a county, it's county land, and everyone is invited.
Okay.
You're welcome to join us.
Thanks, Helen. It's Helen Nadel, the Executive Director of Summit Community Gardens Eats. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Park City is starting an 18-month study to evaluate potential transit solutions for State Route 248. The highway is one of two entryways into Park City running from U.S. Highway 40 to Park Avenue. The route narrows to one lane each way as it goes past Park City Hill and often creating traffic bottlenecks on busy ski days and morning commutes. According to data compiled by Park City, SR 248 carries roughly 17,000 vehicles today with peak loads of 2,000 cars per hour. Population in the area is growing at an average rate of about 7%, and associated traffic is forecasted to follow a similar plan. In 2018, Park City and Summit County Councils formally opposed a plan by the Utah Department of Transportation to widen SR 248 to five lanes, instead opting for a public transit first philosophy. On Friday, the Park City Council approved a $1 million contract to study public transit solutions for the road. The agreement was entirely funded by Park City Summit County sales tax. Park City planning manager Julia Collins says that the study is necessary to leverage grants for any type of project that the city may want to pursue. And Park City senior transportation planner Connor Capabasso, who will lead the study, says that the 18-month process could yield more bus stops or perhaps even a larger project.